Hello, and welcome to the Next Stage Press podcast, where we talk theater and playwriting with the various playwrights of Next Stage Press. I'm your host, Gene Cato, and for the next half hour or so, we'll be speaking with Texas playwright Amanda Bishop Guthrie about her experience with the Texas University Interscholastic League, better known in the Lone Star State as UIL, the origins of her popular short play, Ville du Havre, as well as what compels her to choose historical-based subjects for her writing. Amanda, hello, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
It's great to talk to you. You are the very first high school theater director and instructor, really, that we've had on the podcast. So school has to be just starting to get really rolling down there in the Lone Star State. How's school going so far?
It is going great. I love it. I'm at Kauffman High School now, and we're working on our fall musical, and it's going really well.
Oh, terrific, terrific. So I always like to start these things off just by having the playwrights just kind of tell us a little bit of history about themselves. So let's start off by just give us a brief history of Amanda Guthrie.
Okay, well, I grew up in Mahia, Texas, which is a pretty small town. I participated in theater in high school, which is actually where I met my husband. We've been married for 11 years now and have three kids. I actually didn't pursue theater or writing in college. Instead, I got a degree in human relations from East Texas Baptist University, which was a combination of psychology or sociology courses, and that has really served me well in the theater field, as you might imagine.
Right.
When I graduated, I worked a variety of jobs, but just could never settle on a career that I really loved. So I would work during the day and volunteer in community theater in the evenings. And one day I just said, you know what, I need to be getting paid for this. So now I work all day in theater and work all night in theater and get paid for it. So it's awesome.
That's fantastic. So, you know, I'm pretty familiar with the area down there. You're from Mahia. A lot of people from out of state pronounce it Mexia. But you're from Mahia, and now you teach in Kauffman, Texas. So just tell us right there, you know, what is it about high school theater that you find most compelling?
I love high school theater because the students are just so hungry. They're still at a young age where they're not too jaded by the world too much, but they're old enough to really handle theater as a deep and meaningful art form. So it's just, to me, it's the sweet spot of getting to direct young minds. They have their whole lives ahead of them. And in my experience, being a part of a quality theater program really helps shape who they become, not only as artists, but as people. And I get to be a part of that, so that's really cool.
That's terrific. Now, Mahia, that's up there off of, it's kind of heading towards the, almost like the neck of Texas, it seems like, when you go up I-45 and then you head west just a little bit before you, the cutoff before you get up to Dallas. I've been through there many times, and I'm finding that area, there's an awful lot of high schools and stuff in that area that are really getting involved with that, and UIL seems like it is popular as ever up in that area, even, you know, for something that's you know, outside of the major metropolitan areas. I think a lot of people don't really understand exactly just how popular UIL is down there, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I grew up in Texas. I was part of it 32 years ago, and it seems like that it's still the king out there in Texas. So just for anyone listening out there that might not know what UIL is, can you talk about it a little bit and tell us about what your experience directing for their one-act play contest is?
Absolutely. So UIL is the University Interscholastic League, and they pretty much govern all extracurriculars in Texas, from sports, band, academics. And one event that they offer is the one-act play competition. And it's basically where schools compete against one another with a 40-minute play for a chance to advance. And so you can advance to bi-district, area, region, and state, just like sports. We're broken into conferences. So we have the small schools in the 1A, the largest schools in 6A, and we compete against, you know, similar sized schools. We start at the district level and we hit schools along the way that's determined by UIL, the state office. And at each contest, we have a panel of three adjudicators that evaluate our plays and then choose three to advance. But they also provide a written evaluation and oral critiques from one of the judges to each school. And it's just a really well-oiled machine, the giant rule book that, you know, we love and we hate, and it dictates a lot of what we can do. We travel to other schools when we compete. So you're looking at best case scenario traveling to 5 different locations for 15 different adjudicators, which is really cool. It's so much fun. I believe most directors, when you bring up one-act play, the word that they would use to describe it would probably be bittersweet. There's the thrill of the contest day, having students recognized individually, having your school called out to advance. There's medals and trophies involved. But also sometimes there's a little bit of injustice. You know, there's human nature in the adjudicators, and the system is, you know, the best as it can be. It's still a little flawed in some areas.
Sure. Let me ask you something, since you bring that up. How is that when you're talking about just the getting students that are still kind of learning the theatrical process to kind of navigate those waters, there's got to be an awful lot of teaching moments on that when the human element is brought into UIL.
Yes. So, of course, my philosophy is we do it for the art, we do it for the storytelling, we do it to grow as artists. But, you know, there's always that voice in the back of your head that says, but you could win a state championship trophy.
Sure.
So, you know, we do talk about that with our students, and we talk about how everything in life is, in essence, a competition when it comes to job interviews and things like that. So we try to, you know, split the difference and make it a fun competition, but at the end of the day, it's not about the trophies. It's about what we learn and the stories we tell.
Right. So with the breakup of that, what's the farthest that you've ever driven to take a show to contest from where you are? How long have you been at Kauffman? Did you just start there this year, or have you been teaching here for a year or so?
I've been there for 1 year.
1 year. This is your second year. Okay. So what's the farthest that you've ever driven to take a show to competition?
Well, it's Central East Texas, so there's a lot of schools kind of packed into this area. So the furthest I've probably gone is about an hour and a half. You know, Texas is a pretty big state.
Right, sure.
So, about an hour and a half. But a lot of schools, if you're in deep South Texas or deep West Texas, you're looking at driving 3 or 4 hours for contests sometimes, especially the further you advance.
Right, right, right. Well, it's got to be something as the fight starts to happen, as you start moving toward regionals and then moving toward state. It's got to be pretty exciting, you know, just kind of looking exactly where you're going to go and who you're going to compete against next and where they're from.
Right.
Right, right.
It's always interesting. We try not to worry too much about who the competition is, but it's fun to get to see other schools and the way the students and the directors work together. And, you know, it's free theater we get to watch on competition day.
Right. And there's cool. Got to be some really good learning opportunities there for the students, just kind of watching the creative process come from, a lot of times in these contests, from time to time, it's probably rare, but from time to time, you'd see a couple of the same shows that would be competing against one another, and being able to see how different schools and different creative teams attack the same material. That's got to be a good learning process for students.
Absolutely. Actually, last year at our regional competition, we did the 39 steps, which the maximum actors you can have on stage is 15. So we used all 15 actors and did a very kind of out-of-the-box way of directing on the show. And the show that we hit, that we were competing against, had 4 actors on stage. So it was very interesting, I think, for the entire audience, and especially us who were in one of the companies, to watch and see how we each took the script and did something completely different with it.
Oh my gosh, that had to be absolutely wonderful to see the same show done, one with 15 actors, and the exact same thing done with 4.
Wow, that's incredible.
That's incredible. Okay, let's talk a little bit about your work. Now, you have a play that has become very popular in this contest. It's a 40-minute wonder called Ville du Havre. What can you tell us about the origin of this work, and what is it about the play that you think speaks to directors and actors and audiences alike? Because it seems to be like it's really starting to pop up more and more and more at competition time. And so tell us a little bit about the origins about that, and you talk about the play in general, if you'd like.
Sure. Okay. Well, Ville du Havre is a mostly true story that connects the lives of the man that wrote the poem and the man that wrote the music for the well-known hymn It As Well. It is a gut-wrenching story. So I joke that anyone could have written the piece and had success with it, because it's just a beautiful narrative as is. I think that what draws directors, actors, and audiences to love it is that it's not fiction. There's something about historic drama that's just cool to be a part of and to watch. And people just connect with it on a spiritual level. It was written out of necessity because before I began directing One Act Play, I was in it in high school, and then I studied it for many years, just going to contests and soaking it all in. And I fell in love with historic drama in that process. So when I got my first job directing at Teague High School, I knew that I wanted to do historic drama. And I read and I read and I searched, and I just could not find the perfect fit for my kids that also fit the parameters of UIL When I Play, with the 15 actors on stage, traveling set, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I had known the story and I had had friends who had written their own work for competition. So I thought, you know what, let's give it a try. And it was a really cool process. We kind of used the competition as a workshop. We would go to a clinic and they would say, you know, what about this? What about this? And, you know, the normal world of theater, there's not much you can do because you're tied to the script. But in right. our world, I could just rewrite the opening and, you know, go from there. And then the next clinician would come on something different. So it was a really neat process.
So how many different kind of incarnations of the play did you go through before you finally settled on the version that you have right now?
Probably three or four. We started doing a small like reader's workshop, just, you know, in my living room, like, let's read it. Then once we got it on stage, I changed it a little bit. And then, you know, as I said, as we went through the clinicians and adjudicators, I would tweak it. So by the time it got to publishing, it was probably in about its fourth version.
Fourth version. All right. Did you use the students from your high school in the process of it and kind of get them a part of that? Or was it, did you have a group of actors that you had brought in? Were they adult actors or were they student actors while you were going through the workshop?
Well, my heart is students, and it was written for the students. So the student actors had a very large part in it. I did have some friends and peers or students who had graduated, co-directors that peer directors that are also high school and play directors who read it, but mostly the students, me and the students on stage working it out.
That had to be absolutely incredible for the students, because that's a extremely rare opportunity to get into the developmental process of a play. And so that initial core group of students that you had working on that, given the fact that now that the play is published and it's starting to drop into UIL more and more and more, they had to be pretty excited about that. And I guess when they hear that the play is still marching forward in UIL, that's got to be pretty exciting for them. Do you ever hear from them about that?
I do. They loved being a part of it. And when I got it published, they all bought a copy, and, you know, people from the hometown would want them to sign it because they were listed as the original cast. So that was really cool. And many of them are actually pursuing theater in college. And I think they're better because they were able to go through this process, which is really neat.
Yeah, just kind of getting a different side of it. So this, right. You kind of answered this, have you since then ever considered having the play at a full length, or you pretty much it was always meant to fit into the UIL 40-minute time limit?
Well, other schools have done it outside of UIL. There's actually been a university that did it, and there are so many moments in it. If you know the story, the Spaffords go through a great deal of loss with their children and with the fire, and there are so many moments in it, even though we scrunched it into the 40-minute time limit, it could run an hour and a half. And other schools who've done it outside of One Act Play, I actually had a group do it after Hurricane Harvey as a nonprofit fundraiser. And they were able to do it as a reader's theater. And it's just, there's so many moments that forcing it into 40 minutes is almost a travesty.
Right.
So full length is definitely the goal. I love UIL One Act Play, but I think the story is more important.
Right. Now, this is kind of one of those rare crossover plays that because of the ties to the hymn and everything, it also could be a crossover for church groups that might want to try and put it on rather than just a school as well. So it seems like it might be popular for church groups to do as well, which is kind of unusual for new plays that are rolling out. You don't normally think of plays that would, you know, have their base, you know, because of the hymn, basically, that it's based off of. You don't normally think of plays that would typically be good crossovers for school and competition and also church groups. So there's also a potential another audience out there for that.
Right, yeah. And what I've run into that a little bit, the problem with that is that I did write it for two very strong male actors and two very strong female actors who just really drove the script to a really deep place. And a lot of times church groups don't have that kind of talent.
Right,
So we
right,
kind of
right.
ran into, I really want to do it, but I don't know if I can do it justice because I don't have the actors. So hopefully we'll find groups who can do that. I thought about maybe having traveling groups go around and present it to churches or something like that because it definitely has a spiritual message that speaks to churches.
Now, when tell us a little bit about the first production of this, because I mean the scope of the story is pretty big. So just for again another thing, since for folks that don't really know the format of how UIL is put together, you have a very specific UIL set pieces that you have to use and all that. So give us a little bit of the feeling of that first production. How did you dress it up, and how did you move using the restrictive the restrictions that UIL puts on you on what you can put on stage?
So UIL, we have a unit set where you can use that, and you can pretty much use anything that is naturally found within a home, or you can use pretty much any hand prop or anything that is natural, found indoors or outdoors.
Right.
So my concept was to do the entire play as a shipwreck because that's how Mr. Spafford loses his girls, is they sink on a ship, and then he writes the story. While he's out on the waters thinking about, the tragedy. And so I wanted to go really artistic with it, and I didn't want there to be limits on time and space. So we did use the UIL unit set, but we basically had carnage on stage of things that would look like they had been in a shipwreck to speak to the fact that you never know when tragedy is going to hit, and tragedy is everywhere that we look around. But as you know, the central conceit of the play is hope. Also, Philip Bliss, who is the secondary character in the show, who writes the lyrics, who's trying, or who he writes the music, I'm sorry, trying to find the perfect melody for it. He is writing at a different time than when Philip wrote the poem. So there's the integration of time and space and location, and how it doesn't really matter. Philip's on stage at the same time as Horatio, and what really matters is the message. So we were able to really accomplish that through with even though we had the restrictions with one act play, because I didn't really bother with the unit set. I just kind of used hand props and things like that.
Have you enjoyed going? Have you seen any some of the other UIL productions of it since it's gone up? I mean, have you dropped in and seen any of those and seen how the differences are?
I have. I try to, if I can try to see it, I will make my way there. What is very interesting is that I actually competed against it at the area competition this past year.
You competed against
So
your own play. That's
I did.
wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah,
Yeah, what was that
I did.
experience like? So.
It was different. It was hard because my students at Kaufman know me as, Miss Guthrie, their director. They didn't really know me as a playwright, as, my students at previous schools did. So they thought it was really neat. And they saw it, and it was Carthage High School. They did a really nice job with it. But it was weird. It was definitely hard to sit in the audience and watch it and, wrap my brain around the fact that they
That's
were my
right.
competition
You know,
and
and
they
you
were
brought
doing
up the
my
whole
script.
thing. You're competing against yourself, and you're sitting there going, "Gosh, I kind of hope I win, and I kind of hope I lose. It's got to be one or the other." So that's got to be a yeah. No, it's
It
that
was
has got to be a
interesting.
very, very unique situation to be in, to where I can't even imagine sitting in the audience and watching your own play and knowing you're competing against yourself. That's wonderful. Okay,
Yeah.
another one of your works that Next Stage Press just published is a play called The Fourth Ward, and it's also based on a historical event. So tell us a little bit about that, and what was it about this story that compelled you to write about it?
So writing and directing Le Noir for one act play was a very deeply personal experience. The wins felt bigger and the losses felt bigger. So we advanced three rounds. We were chosen as alternates to the region competition that year with the show. And I ended up feeling as a director a little bit selfish. I felt like maybe I had done my students justice. There's, theories that certain plays win. And I thought, had we done a different play, might we have been the state champions? Because we had very talented actors. I had inherited a great group. And so the next year I sat down and I talked to them. I said, guys, what do you want to do? I couldn't find a script for you guys last year. I only graduated one that year. And I said, you know, I have this idea for a story and I love the experience with you guys, but I am not going to teach you out of those medals. If you want me to find you a show that's on the hot on the one-night play circuit, let's do it. And they shot that idea down very fast.
Oh, really?
They said, no, we want you to write and we want to be a part of it. We want to help with the conception of it. Like, let's do this together and, you know, write a story. And I said, wow, okay. So they said, basically, forget medals, forget trophies. Let's keep diving into this a little deeper. It was a really unique group. So I had always loved immigration into the United States in its early years and the story of Jacob Riis and photography. And so I pitched that idea and they pitched ideas to me and we came up with a really cool story. This one is less historically accurate. I mean, it's based on the life of Jacob Riis, but it's got a lot of stories of the immigrants that we came up with together as a group. Mm-hmm. And I wrote the piece and we made it to the exact same spot in competition as we had the year before, but we were all just so happy that we took the risk with an original piece.
Also trying to fit it into the writing specifically for UIL in the 40-minute time limit. So just a little bit, so you advanced, how far did you advance with this one? You said you advanced to the same spot. Did you get to regionals with it or?
Alternate to regionals.
You got alternate to regionals.
To district by district.
You weren't competing against yourself a second time, were you?
No. No. Right. We had hoped to, you know, advance for the goal with this one was state. And we did something that was truly unique in one act play in that my actress got best actress all the way up along with my student who got best actor. So we took the individual medals for best actor and best actress all the way up. We just couldn't do that final push to region to get further than we did. But that's actually a truly unique thing to do in the one act play world. Win that many individual awards.
Sure. And then to get alternate in the process on that. So that's fantastic. I mean, that's two times that, you know, you've had students that have really, really dug their heels in. That's very impressive with your program to just have the students go, you know what? We're not worried about medals. We want to collaborate and we want to work on something like that, to develop that and be a part of the developmental process and be a part of something that is going to shape a work of art that it's going to forever cement, you know, what a particular play will be in the process. Mm-hmm. So what was the when you put the Fourth Ward up there? I mean, we know the success of Ville-du-Havre, but when you put the Fourth Ward up there, what were some of the comments that you got about it? You know, I'm assuming that you had some really good feedback from people outside of the group after you finally unveiled this for the first time. What was that like?
Well, I put off publishing Fourth Ward for a little longer than I did Ville because there was something about it. It was we dug our heels in deeper with Fourth Ward, and it's actually my preferred script. I actually like it more than I do Ville. And something just wouldn't let me put it out there for the public until I knew that I was doing it for the right reasons. So it took a lot of back and forth on whether or not I would publish it. And everyone I talked to, the kids especially, they would, you know, text me or email me from college and say, get that script published because we're ready for the public to see it. So when I finally put it out there, I got a lot of positive feedback on it, but I got the same thing that I happened to get with the churches because it was written for brilliant actors, very specifically for their looks. And, you know, not a lot of people have the students in high school to produce the work like we did. So I'm hoping that someone is brave enough to pick it up and challenge their students to take on these roles because they're great roles. But it's definitely my favorite of the two.
Okay, here's a quick question for you here. What do you think Ville-du-Havre and the Fourth Ward, what do you think the biggest challenges for both of those plays are? If you were to have to sum each one of them up down to just pick one item out of them that you think is the biggest challenge from your vantage point, having worked on both of them, what do you think that is?
Mm-hmm. I would say with Ville, the biggest struggle is that there is no box. There's no, it goes back and forth between time and space. And like I said, it's set on a shipwreck in a living room. So I think a lot of people have a hard time wrapping their heads around it artistically because it was written from a very artistic angle. So I'd say that would be the biggest struggle with Ville. And then with Fourth Ward, 100%, it's the acting. It was written to be acted well, and the story itself is good, but what really makes the show is having actors who can pull off the content.
Okay. All right. Well, we're about to come up on it here on our time, but I've got two quick questions for you left. Are you currently working on another play that we can be looking forward to? If so, what can you tell us about it?
I am not. Since I wrote the other two, I've had a baby, and he's two now.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. But that made me push pause on writing for a bit. And also, I've been able to find the puzzle piece out there in the world to fit my groups. Since then. So we've been doing other works. But so that means when I write again, maybe it won't be out of necessity. Maybe it'll just be out of pleasure. So I'm looking forward to that. My husband wants me to write a comedy. So we'll see. I'll have to keep you posted.
All right. Well, we'll see if there's another comedy coming up. And just so you know, so people can follow you from whenever this next project comes out. Are you on social media or anything like that people can follow your writing exploits?
I'm on social media. I have personal pages, but the best way to keep up with me, with what I'm doing in terms of just theater, would be to follow Kaufman Theater Company. That is my Facebook page for the current school that I'm working at. But I've had a very positive experience with you guys. So I'm hoping if I have another one, maybe I can get my name out through you guys' page and social media.
All right. Terrific. Well, Amanda, that's all the time that we have right now. Thank you for joining us for this little podcast that's going around. And just reminding everyone, if you would like to purchase either of Amanda's plays, they're available on Amazon.com. And you can read the first half of her plays or any of Next Stage Press's works on our website at www.nextstagepress.net. Also, if you're hearing this podcast for the first time, you can find the other episodes on iTunes or Podomatic. Just search Next Stage Press and hit subscribe. And as always, they're free to listen to, and feel free to share us with the world through the wonderful marvel of social media. If you'd like to get in touch with me, I can be reached on Twitter at Gene Cato or by email at genecato@nextstagepress.net. And feel free to follow Next Stage Press on Twitter at Next Stage Press or on our Facebook page at NS Press Podcast. So join us next time when we'll talk to Texas playwright Bradley Neese about writing true crime as we dive into his play The Boys from Houston Heights, which is based on the longest and most grisly murder sprees in the history of the Bayou City. Until then, keep writing plays, keep reading plays, and keep going to the theater and supporting new work. And Amanda, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.